You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Everything you know is wrong. Black is white, up is down, and short is long. And everything you thought, which was so important, doesn't matter. Oh, there. This is Bradley Martin with the Screener Squad, just quoting some Weird Al Yankovic lyrics from the Bad Hair Day album. Kind of the premise of this sci-fi epic we'll be talking about today, presented by Netflix, Three Body Problem. Five friends from Oxford are discovering that people in their scientific field are killing themselves. We have Saul Duran, the playboy who likes to drink and have lots of sex and is very attractive looking, played by Jovan Adepo. Eliza Gonzalez, who is playing Augie Salazar, who is working on extremely thin, super cool tech, fiber optic technology. It's like kind of cutting anything that can't be cut at a microscopic level. It's very cool stuff. She's having some trauma herself because every time she continues with her studies, a countdown appears in her field of vision, and it's not going away. Alex Sharp, playing Will Downing, who is in love with Jin Chen, played by Jess Hong. He is a very brilliant physicist and an all-around likable guy. But his whole purpose, he's like a puppy in love with Jin. Jin Cheng, who is closest to their Oxford professor, Ye Wen Jie, played by Rosalind Chow, who has a bit of a past behind her, a bit of a, maybe she's not letting on more than she knows about these weird ongoings. See, when she was a kid back in the 60s, unfortunately, her father was brutally murdered by an unruly mob that was actually a sanctioned murder, actually, since China, well, their government wasn't doing so good, and that's the most I'm going to get into that. She ends up working for a Red Coast base project and discovers that, what's Red Coast doing? Well, they're sending messages out into space, hoping to get a reply. And that's kind of what this show is about. If you, listener, were to send a message out into space, what would it be? And what sort of reply would you like? Would this be a culturally confusing situation if you got a reply back that you didn't understand? Or would you misinterpret the reply like on so many drunken Friday night text messages? You know, how are you can be the beginning of a huge argument, for example. Also of the Oxford Five, there is John Bradley playing Jack Rooney. He's a geek, he's a fun nerd, and he's very lovable. And he's with his four friends trying to solve the mystery of the three-body problem. There is a ton to cover in this show. With me to cover it, Neil is with us.
Greetings.
And also we have Ray.
Hello.
So you send a message out into space, you get one back. Panic, rejoice, fear, start a cult, tell the military, keep it to yourself. What do you do? And does the show cover this vast theme of paranoia, humanity as a culture, and the possible hope of advancement?
Well, evidently what you do is all of the above, eventually.
Yes, eventually.
Eventually, yeah. All of the above. You know, it's an interesting premise in the beginning, too, that one of the reasons that the message gets answered the way it does from Earth is because the person who answers it is completely disillusioned by humanity on all points. Because like you said, she's in China during the communist regime and everything else. And then her father's killed. She doesn't think humanity's any good anymore. So she kind of goes, hey, you know, maybe if I tell these aliens that I have now contacted to come on over here, you know, we'll greet you. Maybe you can fix us because maybe you're better than we are. That's a big chance to take, but she takes it. And it just kind of, man, this thing goes from there. And there's a lot of stuff in here. And there's a lot of hard science in here, too, which in some science fiction there is, and some science fiction there isn't. But there's a lot of hard science in this. And it's very interesting. And I want to talk about it a lot. And I'm sure that Neil wants to talk about it a lot. But I also don't want to spoil it for anybody because I'd like people to watch it. This show is a real thinker.
Yes, based on the novel, the Hugo-winning award novel series, The Three-Body Problem, written by Xixin Liu. And I read, my translation was by Ken Liu. I think it's a brilliant, absolutely wonderful book. I have it on audio as well. Sometimes I'll just turn it on and listen to the sometimes absurd, but sometimes really thought-provoking, hardcore science fiction. And mind-blowingly not science fiction, actual science that people are working on today. Hard-on colliders, whoa! Neil, how did you feel about the science of this, the story of this? And also, we got the elephant in the room. Our boys from Game of Thrones are back. Benioff and Weiss. How'd this work for you?
I came in not reading. I have not read the book. It's been recommended, but had no knowledge of the story. I really enjoyed how this laid it out. I know they made changes. Our Game of Thrones showrunners, we know they can start a show, they can run a show. The question is, once they get off the original source material, the choices they make from there were, heavily critiqued. This has all that laid out, so this may not be an issue for them. And without knowing the books, I don't know if they've ventured too far off the path or they've kept the general gist of it. But this was fresh. This was a new take on, the sci-fi of how we are contacting and contacted by alien races, and the fact that it's also now this imminent threat that's far down the road. It's not that something's in orbit, something's here. It's something's coming, and they've started making steps to ensure when they finally get here, we're conquerable, or however you want to put it. So I thought this was a really, really cool concept and really well executed on the show. The word unfilmable had been thrown around with this series because it's so big and it has all these ideas. Season one, check, they got it. Now, if it gets other seasons and can pull it off again, we'll have to wait and see. But I really enjoyed this.
I kind of put away the unfilmable critiques after Life of Pi because I thought that was something that could not be filmed. And Ang Lee, of course, made one of my favorite movies that year. There are a lot of changes from the books that I feel only the most precious of book lovers will be irritated by. I was irritated by at first until you really get into the flow of the show. And then it's like, oh, you know what? I kind of like these characters a lot. You know, they're so charming and endearing. Even the ones that are very, like Augie Salazar, she's so angry all the time. And we never really figure out why. My biggest question as to why she's angry, though, after four episodes, it just kind of went away. Like, I guess that's just her personality. She's a very confrontational person, an extrovert, as well as aggressive. And that's fine. People are that way. What I'd really like to talk about is the one who nails his book character, Dai Shi. Private detective played by Benedict Wong. Now, as we know, Benedict Wong can crack wise in the most driest of ways and really get everyone laughing. He's investigating these suicides, and the violence is Game of Thrones level violence. We do see some dead bodies that clearly did not commit suicide, some that clearly have. And it's a little gross, but he's one of my favorite characters in this whole thing because of how, oh, there's a term for it, like homicide cop humor. He approaches every scene, and I really loved that character. Did y'all have any favorite characters through this series?
Well, just before you mentioned it, that was where I was going to go. yeah, because first of all, Benedict Wong, and we know that he's just a solid actor anyway. But we get a role here where, yes, you're right, he has the homicide humor. He gets to crack wise every once in a while, but not, you know, not in that whole really extreme way. It is
right,
understated.
Not like slapstick or anything.
Yeah, it's understated. It's a dark humor and that kind of thing. But the rest of the time, you have a guy here, and it's really interesting because even though he's in this unprecedented situation, you know, we have the aliens and all of these things, and everybody's reacting different to that. He knows he has a job to do, and he is just doing his job. Now, that's, you know, that's the way he's getting through this, maybe, and that's the, but he becomes this kind of stabilizing character in a lot of his scenes. And even for some of the people that he's with, that he's interacting with, some of our main characters, because he is just a man doing his job. And you would think that might be boring to watch in some ways, but with him, it's not. He's just this very solid presence the entire time. And yeah, so he was one of my favorites. And I do agree with you too. And unfortunately, at times I found Augie a little overbearing. You know, just
whiny
just
baby.
Whiny baby.
She's a whiny baby. Whiny baby. At times, that's unexplained to me.
Yeah. But
I don't think it's unearned, but she's just a whiny baby at times.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. But she's okay. You know, that's her place in the friend group. You know, she's the whiny baby. That's fine. You know, I guess after a while, I was the same with you. That's fine. She is the
whiny
baby.
Her research is so important too.
She's the whiny baby of the group, and that's fine. I mean, you know, after a while, and then of course, you know, we've also got Will, and Will is just the good that you would love to see in all of us and all of humanity. So they have all of these character archetypes that they have in their friend group and that they're playing with. But I don't think any of them are necessarily become caricatures of that friend type, if you will, which I really appreciated about this.
Yeah. They all get at least one episode to really breathe as performers. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of critiques early on I could see being like, these aren't even real people. They're just kind of going through the motions of this murder mystery. But by episode 4, I think we really get to start to step into the flesh of these characters. Jin, who is going into this VR game with her buddy Jack, and Jack John Bradley, Game of Thrones alum, that seems out of place. But as the show goes on, you find out, oh, this weird VR game they started playing together because they found it in the home of their friend who committed suicide actually connects to everything. And how it connects is pretty cool. Now, in the book, tons of details, tons of really cool think pieces. A lot of our history, Earth's history, is within that game. Summing it up to the sequences it did, I thought it was kind of fine, but I did feel the heat of a lot of TV shows and movies that attempt to have actors play video games, and that was nobody would play this video game. This is a really silly, dumb video game, and why would you ever even attempt to play such an obscure, not very fun thing?
There's a reason it's not a video game. It's a VR experience. It's even past that. That's what Jin instantly is like, that you forget you put on a headset and are playing something. You feel completely there. I think it was Jack that said this is at least 50 to 100 years advance of where we have anything now. So it didn't matter if they were there knitting or trying to solve a galactic problem, it was the medium that was so interesting and intoxicating. That's why they do it. That's why they keep going back, because they can't believe what this is. Doesn't matter what they're doing. It's so fantastical, they can't stay away.
And Jack does say he tasted the dirt in the game, and that was pretty, that's a pretty cool line. Yeah. That he throws away as well. So we got the Jonathan Pryce, another Game of Thrones alum. He was a religious fanatic cult leader in Game of Thrones. He's kind of reprising that role here as Mike Evans, who may or may not have a connection to Ye Winje. In the book, and this is the last time I'm going to be silly about it, guys, promise. In the book, we don't get into the much of the spiritual cult fanaticism in a there are God and the gods are coming to save us. I didn't mind that so much here, because Mike Evans definitely sounds like a religious fanatic. How did you like Jonathan Pryce's performance? And honestly, did you think the way he reacted to the news of visitors coming was even wrong or dangerous? Like, say, the detective and a special task force team led by Leon Cunningham's Thomas Wade did.
Well, I mean, here's the thing about it. I don't know that there's a wrong way to react to the news that
sure.
aliens are coming, or a right way to react. Everybody's going to do it differently. And I think that may be, even though I didn't read the book, I think that maybe that may be a change that I would have been okay with as well, because you're going to have some people that are going to react the way that character reacted. Some people are going to think these are gods. Some people are going to think this is the end of the world and I should go ahead and kill myself now before, you know, they can get here, because it's going to be worse once they get here. Some people are going to be somewhere in between. Some people are going to be welcoming. Some people are going to be stopping them. That's one of the things about this. And I think it's really good that they got a series for this and they got the scope to do this, because you get all of these different angles and all of these different walks of life and all of these different people with different experiences then reacting to this problem. And you can see, I think, you know, in a way, even though it seems, you know, totally fantastical, you can maybe see yourself as one of these characters somewhere where you might fall along the spectrum. And that's a good thing, especially in this, because again, there's a lot of, like I was saying before, there's a lot of hard science in this. And you can get lost in that hard science sometimes, you know, and say, ugh, I don't get it. I don't understand it. This is dry. I'm not, you know, but there are other characters that you can go with or relate to, or that you can go, ooh, no, you know, those would be the crazy people and I wouldn't want anything to do with them. So, right. You know, Pryce is great. He's understated, as most of the time he is in most of his roles, but there is that moment of panic for him too. And I'm not, you know, I can't go into, again, no sure, spoilers, yeah. But there is that moment of panic for him, and you don't see him just, you know, completely fall apart, but you see it. Oh, you see it all over his face.
Well, he's silky smooth like he always is, and not to go into too much, but I don't know of many that could have pulled off how a fairy tale could make things go so wrong. Just the telling of, like, a grandfather to a grandchild reading of a fairy tale, how that could go so left turn and screw things up. But he does it. Like, I don't know of many other actors or actresses that could have pulled that scene off of dread just oozing out of the television by what just happened. But remember how he's introduced. He's introduced as this uber environmentalist who's isolated himself in this tiny little forest in Mongolia/China to save a very specific breed of bird. To he inherits his father's energy consortium, to now he's introduced to aliens are coming. More powerful, more advanced aliens are coming. So the character, while we don't spend tons of time, has gone over this crazy journey over about like 4 decades. And he's turned into this, he would not see himself as the leader. He would see himself almost as the Pope. He's the messenger for he didn't say gods. He just says Lord. It's always Lord. That's the little, they weave it in just subtly of Lord. That could be like in a kingdom. That could be in a religion. It's just Lord.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct. There's a lot of really cool big ideas that come from just the knowledge that he has. And he's privy to knowledge that none of the rest of the human race get to have. Now, before we close out to our final thoughts, people are wondering, Game of Thrones, why them? Why did they take a deep think sci-fi project? Again, we're avoiding spoilers. How did you guys like the spectacle, specifically in a episode 4, I think it was, where a boat needs to be stopped? And do you feel that it was in place with this story, the horrors of that spectacle?
Let me ask this real quick. Was that in the book?
Absolutely, yes. Okay, maybe not to the extent of this horror, but yes.
I was wondering if they had come up with that completely originally or got inspired by something. It makes you think, huh? It's awesome and awful all at the same time, because the show, this boat that's been chilling in international waters is a community with families, with children. And while they give you the gore of the event, they don't necessarily wallow around in it like a bird bath splashing around.
Right.
But they do it just enough that now your mind's eye is like, they said there was like 1,000 people on this ship. Oh, no. I think it was extremely well done. It's haunting, and like I said, it's awful and awesome all at the same time.
It is. That's exactly it. And it's something that, of course, you said it was from the book, but they needed it, and they needed to make it as visceral as they could without going overboard, because that is one of the moments of a turning point too for several other characters who were involved. And of course it brings to mind that whole, you know, we've just had this wonderful movie about Oppenheimer, and it brings to mind that whole thing of, you have these scientists who are going into this and creating something that they know is awesome and powerful, but you know, they maybe have the best of intentions for it, but then realize that what they've created could also destroy the entire world. And you know, when the military gets involved and picks up whatever you're working on and weaponizes it, and so you have a turning point for several of the other characters. So I think that moment, they couldn't have glossed over it. It needed to be visceral enough, because you have to also see the effect it has on the other characters peripherally and how it changes those people.
No, absolutely. We have Leon Cunningham leading that project and also that task force. Now, he's Sir Davos from Game of Thrones, who was a merchant, an onion merchant with a heart of gold.
But very practical, and this character is just very practical. Like,
exactly.
Your feelings don't matter when it comes to the human race. And while he isn't purposely stepping on people's toes or emotions, he's not thinking of them first, second, or third. It's the task at hand. I didn't have a favorite character. It's the whole cast up and down. He might be the closest.
No, and he sells that ambition of trying to save with just his scowl. And it's an incredible performance. I agree. Now we're going to carry that into our final thoughts. Ray, would you begin, please?
I knew absolutely nothing about this before going into it, except that it was sci-fi, and I like sci-fi. So I was like, okay, let's do this. I had not read the books. I had not read any synopsis. I have not seen a trailer, anything like that. So as we got into it in the first episode or two, like I said, it's pretty heavy on the science. And there was a couple of things I'm like, okay, is this going to really go anywhere? Are we going to pick this up, or are we just going to talk science the whole time? And luckily it does. So I'm going to tell some people, like I recommended this to a few people at work, and most of them are really enjoying it. One of the people I thought was really going to enjoy it, though, was like, ugh, it's too slow. There's too much science. And I'm like, no. Stop. I want to tell people, stick with it. If you think it's too slow, there's too much science in the first two episodes, don't judge it on that. Keep going. You need the science. You need the science to get what we're going to get to down the road. So I thoroughly enjoyed this. I am anxious to see, you know, if they get the other seasons. The showrunners have said in an interview that they would like to do, if they can, 4 seasons. They'd like to do the second book as another season, and then the third book as 2 seasons, because evidently, I guess it's longer than the first 2 books. So I'm very interested to see what they do with this. I like our cast. And I'm intrigued because this thing brings up a lot of different dilemmas. It brings up a lot of emotions. It brings up a lot of God, what would you do if you were in the same situation? And if you are a sci-fi fan, this is you. Get on board. So I'm going to give this a 9. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 wolves in sheep's clothing.
Ooh, very nice. Neil.
I went in knowing very little, but enjoyed it quite thoroughly. And while we keep, oh, it's heavy on the science, but it works. I think why it works is we get a lot of human in this too. These don't feel like caricatures or one-dimensional, any of the characters, even if they're in 1 or 2 episodes, you get a real humanity out of all of them, and that's what balances it. It's not just, all right, get out your scientific calculator and your protractor to keep up with the show. You need to be Googling it as you go along because they're throwing around all these theorems. And no, you don't need that because the humans in the show keep you attached and they explain just enough. And the real science that's driving it is the magic, I did air quotes, you can't see that, of the aliens. And the stuff coming in, and that's we give that a lot more leap of logic or faith, and that's fine. But the science is well balanced with the human side, and I love where they ended the first season. A nice tie-in of like, yeah, chin up, with that last scene, and a good place to end it. I've recommended it to people as well at work, and the ones that have at least started, they binge it in under 2 days because they get hooked. I think that's a pretty good, you know, litmus test for it. And here's hoping they get more seasons. The show's not perfect. I wish you'd get a little more here and there. There's one scene that's kind of pivotal that doesn't make any sense. It involves the group slash cult and an infiltrator, and they're gonna raid it, and what the cops do totally didn't make sense and blows the whole thing up, but it probably wouldn't have blown up. But it's crucial to the rest of the season. So not exactly perfect, but I'm still gonna give it 9.5 super colliders that ceased working correctly.
Oh, those poor super colliders. So me, I'm actually, for once, really glad I read the book first. I was a bit of a curmudgeon since things weren't going perfectly adaptation-wise. One character was 3 characters, and 2 characters was 1 character. This isn't my story. But by episode 3, I was really starting to get hooked. I do like how approachable it is. The scientific discussions are, I'd say, Star Trek level simple. And I'm not saying that as an insulting way, just presented in a way you could understand it. Jin Shan has a very quick explanation of how the first, second, third, fourth, fifth dimension, how human beings perceive time and reality with a pita bread. And it's such a fun, clever way to do that. Really looking forward to another season, even though, you know, like I said, I read the book and have some nitpicks. Get to the Panama Canal episode. It's incredible to watch. That's where the budget is. I'm giving this one 8 out of 10. Brains in Space.